Side 13, The Boat of a Million Years by Powell Anderson, continuing on page 377. Absolute proof of absolute knowledge is impossible, though, and if he never stumbled on some basic new phenomenon, the interplay of the quanta must keep casting forth surprises for him to quest through. The computer system perfected itself. Nothing he had found with his subtlest and most powerful instrumentation was beyond its analysis. Everything he might find in his laboratories, it could predict beforehand, in ultimate detail. His science had reached the end of its search. Idle hedonism repelled him. He set a device to shut down his body while it programmed the patterns that were his mind into the system. "Are you happy?" "Your question is meaningless. I am occupied. I participate in operations. I am one with the accomplishments. Time is mine to do with as I will, for it may take an hour to plan Earth's weathers a year ahead with the measures necessary to contain chaos. It may take a day to design an extension of the web, or compute the fate of a galaxy 10 billion light-years hence on which it has accumulated sufficient data. But each bit of information processed is an event, and to me those hours are as 1 million years or more. Afterward I may descend to the pace of human thought and learn what went on while I was transfigured. On this I meditate. It is small but interesting. Grow into augmentation, Flora, and at last you will share splendor, promises the shade. From Phyllis I understand that few desire such a destiny. They will stay organic, however mutable. Linkage is pleasure, enlightenment, challenge. Joined, we realized what we cannot realize singly about each other and about the cosmos. We bring our revelations back and refashion them in our separate ways. New arts, skills, philosophies, joys, newnesses for which no old name exists spring into being. Thus do we enlarge and fulfill ourselves. Come, try, surrender what you are to find what you are. I merge into Phyllis, Faunus, Phantom Nilth. We are a self that never was before. I am slave who won to freedom, teacher and sportswoman, photosculptor and sybarite, dilettante mathematician and serious athlete. We will need many unions to ease the conflicts and create a single creature. A whirl, a feeling, a measure in the dance. Others have been with us. I withdraw and merge again. I am servant who won to a sort of queenship, guild inhabitant of the sea, professional imaginer, artificial personality designed by the whole in conjunction with the computer. They fly together. They lose themselves. The hive mind blazes and thunders. No, let me out. And I flee down endless, echoful corridors. Fear howls at my heels. It is myself that pursues. She was alone, save for the medical machine that watched over her. For a while she merely shuddered. The breath sawed in her throat. Her sweat stank. Terror faded. The sense of unspeakable loss that followed went deeper and lasted longer. Only as that too drained from her did she gain the strength to weep. "I'm sorry, Phyllis, Faunus, Nils, everybody," she called into the empty room. "You meant so well. I wanted to belong. I wanted to find meaning in this world of yours. I cannot. To me, becoming what I must become would be to destroy all I am, the whole of the centuries and the folk forgotten by everyone else, and the comradeship in secret that formed me. I was born too soon for you. It is now too late for me. Can you understand and forgive?" 9. They met in reality. You cannot embrace an image. Fortune favored them. They were able to use a visitor house at Lake Mapurika Control Reserve on the South Island of what Hanno to this day thought of as New Zealand. The weather was as lovely as the setting. They gathered around a picnic table. He remembered another such board beneath another sky long and long ago. Here a green sward sloped down to still waters in which forest and the white mountains behind stood mirrored. Woodland fragrances arose with the climbing of the sun. From high overhead drifted birdsong. The eight matched the quietness of the morning. Yesterday passions had stormed and clamored. At the head of the table, Hanno said, "I probably needn't speak. We seem to be pretty well agreed. Just the same, it's wise to talk this over calmly before making any final decision. We have no more home, anywhere on earth. We've tried in our different ways to fit in, and people have tried to help us, but we finally faced the fact that we can't and never shall. We're dinosaurs, left over in the age of the mammals." Aliot shook her head. "No, we're leftover humans," she declared bitterly. "The last alive." "I wouldn't say that," Akandal replied. "They are changing, more and faster than we can match, but I wouldn't take it on myself to define what is human." "Ironic," Svoboda sighed. "Should we have foreseen a world where we could at last come forth would necessarily be a world altogether unlike any that ever was before." "Self-satisfied," Wanderer said, "turned inward." "You're being unfair, too," Akandal told him. "Tremendous things are going on. They simply aren't for us. The creativity, the discovery, has moved to..." "What?" "Inner space." "Perhaps," Yukiko whispered. "But what does it find there? Emptiness, meaninglessness." "From your viewpoint," Patulcius replied, "I admit that I, too, am unhappy, for my own reasons. Still, when the Chinese stopped their seafaring under the Ming, they did not stop being artists." "But they sailed no more," Dushan said. "The robots tell us of countless new worlds among the stars, and nobody cares." "Earth is pretty special, as we should have expected all along," Hanno reminded him needlessly. "The nearest planet reported where humans might be able to live in natural surroundings is almost 50 light-years from here. Why mount an enormous effort to send a handful of colonists that far, possibly to their doom, when everybody's doing well at home?" "So they truly could live their, our own kind of lives again, on our own land," Dushan said. "A community," Patulcius chimed in. "If we failed, we could seek elsewhere," Svoboda's voice rang. "If nothing else, we would be human beings out yonder, doing and daring for ourselves." Her look challenged Hanno. The rest likewise turned toward him. Although until now he had barely hinted at his intentions, it was no great surprise when he spoke. Yet somehow the words came before them like a suddenly drawn sword. "I think I can get us a ship." 10. The conference was not a meeting of persons, nor even their images. That is, Hanno's representation went around the globe, and faces appeared shiftingly before his eyes. But this was mere supplement, a minute additional data input. Some of yonder minds were computer-linked, or in direct touch with each other from time to time, or all the time. Others were electronic. He thought of them not by names, though names were known to him, but by function, and the same function often spoke with differing voices. What he confronted, what enveloped him, were the ruling intellects of the world. "We've come a long way from you, Richelieu," he thought. "I wish we hadn't." "Yes, it is possible to build such a spacecraft," said the engineer. "Indeed, preliminary designs were drawn up more than a century ago. They showed what the magnitude of the undertaking must be. That is a major reason why it was never done." "It can't be so far beyond the one I was flitting around the solar system in," Hanno protested, "and the robotic vessels already push the speed of light. You should have studied the subject more thoroughly before you broached your proposal." Hanno bit his lip. "I tried." "It is transhumanly complex," the psychologist conceded. "We ourselves are employing only a semi-technical summary." "The basic principles involved ought to be obvious," the engineer said. "Robots have no need of life support including the comforts necessary for human sanity, and they require minimal protection. For them, an interstellar carrier can be a very low mass, with small payload. Nevertheless, each represents a substantial investment, notably in antimatter. Investment means resources diverted from other uses, observed the economist. Modern society is productive, rich, yes, but not infinitely so. There are projects closer to home that an increasing body of opinion maintains should be started. The sheer size of the universe defeats us, sighed the astronomer. Consider. We have received the first beamcasts from robots that have gone about 150 light-years. It will take longer before we hear from those few we have sent farther. The present sphere of communication contains an estimated 40,000 stars, much too many for us to have dispatched a vessel to each, and more so when the vast majority are dim red dwarfs or cold subdwarfs. The suns not too unlike Sol have generally proved disappointing. True, a flood of scientific discoveries already overwhelms the rate at which we can properly assimilate them, but the public finds little of it especially exciting, and nothing that could be considered a revolutionary revelation. I know all that, of course I do, Hanno began. The engineer interrupted him. You ask for a manned ship that can reach the same speeds. We grant you, no matter how long-lived you are, anything else makes little sense, even for a handful of people, especially if they hope to found a colony. The hull must be spacious, correspondingly massive, and the mass of their necessities will exceed that by a large factor. Those necessities include laser and magneto-hydrodynamic systems able to shield against radiation, as well as to draw in sufficient interstellar gas for the reaction drive. The drive, in turn, will consume an amount of antimatter that will deplete our reserves here in the solar system for years to come. It is not quickly or easily produced, you know. Moreover, the robot craft are standardized. A scale-up such as you have in mind demands complete, basic redesign. The preliminary work stored in the database indicates how much computer capability it will take, enough to significantly curtail operations elsewhere. Production, likewise, cannot use existing parts or facilities. Whole new plants, both nanotechnological and mechanical, and a whole new organization must come into being. The time from start-up to departure may well be as long as a decade, during which various elements of society will endure noticeable inconvenience. In short, you wish to impose a huge cost on mankind in order to send a few individuals to a distant planet which, it seems, may be habitable for them. Yes, Hanno thought, the job will beggar the pyramids. And after a while the pharaohs stopped building pyramids. It was too expensive. Nobody wanted it any more. Aloud, with a stiff smile, I am aware of everything you've told me, at least in a general way. I'm also aware that today's world can do the job without imposing hardship on anyone. Please don't poor-mouth me. You must see some merit in my idea, or we wouldn't be having this meeting. You survivors are unique, murmured the artist. To this day you keep a certain appeal and a certain special interest for those who care about whence we came. And where we may be going, Hanno exclaimed, I'm talking about the future, all humanities. Earth and Sol won't last forever. We can make our race immortal. Humankind will deal with geological problems when they arise, the astronomer said. They won't for several billion years. Hanno refrained from saying, I think anything that might be called human will be long extinct by then, here. Death or transfiguration? I don't know. To me it hardly matters which. Any idea of large-scale interstellar colonization is ludicrous, declared the economist. If it could be done, said the astronomer, it would have been done already, and we would know about it. Yes, I've heard the argument over and over from the 20th century onward. If the others exist, where are they? Why have their exploring robots, at least, never visited Earth? We ourselves, we're interested enough to send follow-ups to those primitive sapiens we found. What little we've learned thus far has touched our thinking, our arts, are spirits in subtle ways. If nothing else, as much as Africa touched Europe when the white man opened it up. If only life and awareness weren't so seldom, so incidental or accidental, I think we'd be out there today seeking, had the loneliness not reached in to freeze us. Nevertheless, they exist. We must be patient, the astronomer went on. It seems clear that they are. In due course, robots will get there, or we may establish direct communication earlier. Across light centuries, that long between question and answer. We don't know what they are like, Hanno said, what the X many different theys are like. You've read the written proposal I submitted, haven't you? I went over each of the old arguments. They get down to simply this, that we do not know. What we do know is what we are capable of. The limits of feasibility are contained within the limits of possibility, declared the economist. Yes, we have studied your report, the sociologist said. The reasons you give for mounting the enterprise are logically inadequate. True, some thousands of individuals believe they would like to go. They feel frustrated, bewildered, out of place, confined, or otherwise discontented. They dream of a fresh start on a fresh world. Most of them are immature and will outgrow it. Most of the rest are visionaries who would retreat shocked if offered the opportunity in reality. You are left with perhaps a few score, for whose emotional convenience you want the entire society to pay a high share cost. They're the ones that matter. Do they? When they are so selfish that they will actually subject their descendants, for they will reproduce if they live, to the hazards and deprivations? Hanno's grin was stark. Old parents have always made that kind of decision. It's in the nature of things. Would you deny your race the opportunities, discoveries, whole new ways of thinking and working and living that this civilization forecloses? Your point is not ill-taken, said the psychologist. Still, you must agree that success is not guaranteed. On the contrary, you would take a rather wild gamble. It is not yet proven that any of the half-score planets thus far found, which seem to have Earth-like environments and biochemistries, is not a long-range death trap. We could look farther if need be. We've got the time. What we need is something worth doing with it. You would indeed find marvels, said the artist. Perhaps you could understand them and convey them back to us in fashions that no robot is quite able to. Hanno nodded. I have a notion that intelligent life can only communicate fully with its own kind. Maybe I'm wrong, but how can we be certain before we've tried? We build our limitations and the limitations of our knowledge into our machines and their programs. Yes, they learn, adapt, modify themselves according to experience. The best of them think. But it's always along machine lines. What do we know about experiences they can't handle? Maybe scientific theory is complete. Maybe not. But in any case, it's a mighty big universe yonder, much too big and full for us to predict. We need more than one breed of explorer. The engineer frowned. So your petition maintains. Did you imagine its contentions are new? They have been brought up again and again to be rejected as insufficient. The probability of success and the value of any success that might be had are too slight in relation to cost. Hanno noticed himself lean forward. It seemed a strange act in this disembodied conversation. I did not bring up my new argument, he told them. I was hoping I wouldn't have to. But the situation has changed. You're dealing with us now, the survivors. You said it. We are unique. We still have our special prestige, mystique, followings. Nothing great, no, but we well know how to use such things. I, in particular, recall ways of raising holy hell with the powers that be. I got quite good at it, back in ancient times. Oh, yes, a gadfly. You can pretend to ignore us. If need be, you can destroy us. But that will cost you. We'll leave troublesome questions behind in many minds. They won't fade, because you've abolished death, and databases don't forget. You've had your world running so smoothly for so long that you may think the system is stable. It isn't. Nothing human ever was. Read your history. The sweep and violence of it, the hidden reefs on which empires foundered with their pride and dreams and gods. The psychologist spoke in steely imperturbability. It is true that sociodynamics is, mathematically, chaotic. I don't want to threaten you, Hanno urged quickly. In fact, I'd fear the outcome, too. It might be small, but it might be enormous. Instead, he fashioned a laugh, malcontents traditionally were a favorite export of governments, and this will be something adventurous, romantic, in an age when adventure and romance are almost gone except for electronic shadow shows. People will enjoy it, support it, long enough for the ship to get underway. You'll find the kudos for yourselves quite useful in whatever else you want to do. Afterward, he spread his palms. Who knows? Maybe a flat failure, but maybe an opening to everywhere. Silence thrummed. The calm of the administrator struck Hanno harder than any physical blow. We have anticipated this, too, from you. The factors have been weighed. The decision is positive. The ship shall be launched. Like that? In this single instant victory? Well, but the computers can have given it thousands of years' worth of human thinking time while I talked. Oh, Columbus! There are conditions, told through his hearing. Suspended animation or no, the mass of 50 or more colonists with supplies and equipment is excessive when the odds are so poor. You 8 survivors must go alone. Of course, you will have a complement of robots, up to and including the intelligent and versatile but subservient personalityless type, toward which you can develop no hostility. You will have such other materiel as appears called for. If your venture prospers, larger numbers may some day follow in slower carriers. We expect you will agree that this is reasonable. Yes. And the symbolism of it. Shrewd. My God, I'll be glad to get out from under a system that calculates everything. But I should not be ungrateful, should I? You're very generous. You always have been to us. Thank you. Thank you. Thank society. You think in terms of kings, but personal power is obsolete. True, I suppose. As obsolete as the personal soul. Furthermore, the administrator continued, you shall not go to the planet suggested in your report. It does lie less than 50 light-years hence, but distance differences on that order of magnitude are comparatively unimportant. When relativistic travel speeds are available. It is the best known of the terrestroid candidates, therefore the most promising for settlement. However, other considerations enter. You spoke of exploration. Very well, you shall explore. The sun and planet chosen for you lie in Pegasus, near the present limit of our communication sphere. You will recall that in that direction, beyond it, about 1,500 light-years hence, is the nearest of those radiation sources that may be high-energy civilizations. We do not know whether it is, in fact, any such thing. The anomalies are numerous. Nor do we know whether your presence can significantly advance the date at which we make contact. Probably not, since the robots en route to there have reported nothing but natural phenomena as far as they have gone. Going to that planet means you will face more unknowns, therefore more dangers than otherwise, although we shall be receiving additional information about it while your ship is under construction. But assigning the most plausible weights to the various uncertainties and imponderables, we have concluded that, on the whole, it is best that your expedition be toward the nearest neighbors comparable to ourselves that we may possibly have. It makes sense. I should have thought of it beforehand, but I'm only one man. We're only 8, only human, woundable flesh and sheddable blood. Do you and your associates accept these terms? Yes. Boundlessly, yes. 11. Bid earth farewell. Something of her, as once she was, abides yet, an enclave, a reserve, a restoration, things small and alive in crannies, simple folk, archaisms, remembrance. Most people are gracious. They grant permission. They draw aside to create solitude, or they come together in fellowship. They give whatever may be in their gift throughout these last few days. Ocean roars, rises, rushes downward and up again. The waves are gray-green in a thousand hues and wrinkles along their backs, white-maned above the steep troughs. The boat surges to their swing and tramp. Rigging sings, sails strain. Shrill and chill, the wind tastes of salt. Wheat goldens toward harvest. It rustles whenever the air stirs, and ripples run across the leagues of it. Bees buzz in a clover meadow from which the sun bakes sweetness. Some ways off, several cows rest, vividly red by a chestnut tree whose crown snares light and scatters it back. A clod crumbles warm in the hand. Candle glow turns faces as soft as the lilting music. Silver, porcelain, linen sheen with it. In tall goblets, champagne sends jewels aloft. It tickles the palate. Laughter runs around the table with the same lightness. The soup is leek pungent, cream rich. Fragrance from courses to come eddies about like a promise of merrymaking afterward until dawn. The canyon wall lifts rusty red toward indigo heaven. Eons band it. Crags rear wind-whittled out of the downslope. But today is so still that a raven's gruck explodes through the heat. That blackness wings over pungency of sage and scrub juniper, which clutch at every root-hold. The green is less sparse at the bottom, where a streamlet gleams and whispers. Though pilgrims come no longer to the shrine, a latter-day kind of piety maintains it, and memories are many. Near its doorway an ancient cypress grips a ledge, limbed in gnarled and silvery austerity. Thence vision descends the mountain, past a cliff cloven by a waterfall, over groves and terraces and the curve of a roof, into dawn mists filling the valley and on to blue heights beyond. Breath is cool. Suddenly a cuckoo calls. A rain shower has ended. The birch forest sparkles with drops on the blades that shiver overhead, on fern and moss beneath. Trunks rise, girls slim out of dappled shadows. Ahead, their whiteness is open on reeds, a lake, a deer that looks about startled and soars away. The mold is soft and wet underfoot. The odors are green. Things and places may be had again in future, but as illusion, a ghost dance of electrons, photons, neurons. Here is the graspable reality. This picture on the wall came from a riverside stall long ago. That one was taken back when folk employed cameras. The table is nearly as old, its wood scarred by use, twice charred where a lighted cigar fell. The rest of the furniture is as comfortably shabby. The book has weight. Its brown-spotted pages crackle between fingers. A name penned on the flyleaf is faded but unforgotten. There are no more graveyards. Death is too rare, land too precious. The burial records of the humble seldom endured anyway. It is guesswork what sights to seek. In a city turned alien, in a remnant of countryside where grass and wildflowers have taken back the plowland, and stand for a while, feeling not altogether alone, before saying very quietly, "Goodbye now, and thank you." 12. Fire raised the wind on which Pythias fared outward. Sol dwindled aft, slowly at first under the low acceleration, but already as the ship approached Jupiter, scarcely more than the brightest among the stars. They filled the encompassing night with keen and steady radiances, white, silver-blue, amber-yellow, ruby-red. The Milky Way coursed heaven like a river of frost and light. Nebulae glowed in the death and birth of suns. Southward gleamed the clouds of Magellan, exquisite at its distance, a spiral, a sister galaxy beckoned. Hannah and Svoboda stood in the command center, looking at the optically enhanced sky. They often did. "What are you thinking about?" he asked at last. "Finality," she answered low. "What?" "This maneuver ahead of us. Oh, yes, it's not absolutely irrevocable. We could still turn back for quite some time to come, can't we? But what's soon going to happen? The course change. It's like, I don't know, not birth or marriage or dying. Something as strange." He nodded. "I believe I know what you mean, and I'm the hard-headed pragmatist. Wanderer certainly does. He mentioned to me that he and Corinne are planning a ceremony. Maybe we should all attend." She smiled. "Rite of passage," she murmured. "I should have realized Wanderer would be the one who understands. I hope he can make a part for me." Hanno gave her a sharp glance. They had all paired off, informally and more or less tacitly. He with her, Wanderer with Makandal, Patulkius with Aliat, Dushan and Yukiko renewing their alliance. Not that each man and each woman had never shared one another. It had been inevitable that they'd swap around occasionally during the long time of their masquerade, but since they had been more apart than together. How much emotional risk dared they take on this voyage? 15 years underway, with God knew what at the end. Separations or no, after centuries, a couple gained considerable mutual sensitivity. Svoboda's hand caught Hannah's. "Not to worry," she said in the American English that was their favorite dead language. "I only have a solemnity in mind. We do need something to lift us out of ourselves. It's wrong to carry our pettinesses along to the stars." "We will, though," he said. "We can't help it. How do you escape being what you are?" 13. Screen fields warded particle radiation off as Pythias slipped close by Jupiter. The planet laid its mighty gravitational hand upon the ship and swung it out of the ecliptic northerly toward Pegasus. Inboard a drum thuttered, feet danced, a song called to the spirits. When it was safely away, robots went outside. Flitting around the hull, they deployed the latticework of ram scoop and fire chamber. By this time, low boost under torch drive had built up a considerable speed. Interaction with the interstellar medium was becoming significant. By terrestrial standards, it was a hard vacuum, averaging about 1 atom per cubic centimeter, overwhelmingly hydrogen. Yet a wide funnel traveling fast would gather a great deal. When the robots returned inside, Pythias resembled a blunt torpedo caught in the net of a giant fisherman. Its folk flashed their last laser beam to Earth, made their little speeches, received ceremonial good wishes. The ions and energies that were to surround them would blank out electromagnetic communications. Modulated neutrinos passed easily through, and Pythias was equipped to receive them. But the beams it could cast dispersed too rapidly. That huge facility, which was capable of sending an identifiable message hundreds or thousands of light-years, was fixed in place, locked on remote targets that might eventually respond. Now, through the net and beyond it, out to thousands of kilometers, the harvester fields came into being. Their forces meshed, intricate, powerful, precise, an ever-changing configuration molded by the controlling computers and what came to them through their sensors. New laser beams sprang from the ship's bows, sword-like, cleaving electron from nucleus. The fields seized on the plasma and swept it backward, well away from the hull. Impact on metal would have released X-rays in swiftly lethal concentration. Aft to the fire chamber, which was itself a magneto-hydrodynamic vortex, the gas went. Another immaterial engine released a little of the antimatter it held suspended, ionized it, sped it into the maelstrom and the star gas. Particles met, annihilated, became energy, the ultimate conversion, 9 × 10²⁰ ergs per gram. That fury lit fusion reactions among other protons and continued them. Behind the heavily shielded stern of Pythias, a tiny sun blazed forth. powered by it, the fields hurled most of the plasma aft. Reaction drove the ship forward. Full weight came back to her crew, an Earth gravity of acceleration, 980 centimeters per second, added every second to velocity. At that rising pace, in just less than a year, the Voyagers would transit half a light year of distance, and their speed would be close to that of light. 14. Nothing natural could have steered the ship. It did itself. A set of systems joined in a unity as complex as a living organism, maintaining its motion and existence outwardly, its livable environment inwardly. Humans became passengers, occupying their time as best they might. Living quarters were bleakly functional, 8 individual staterooms, a gymnasium, a workshop, a galley, a dining saloon, a common room, certain auxiliaries such as bathrooms, and a dream chamber. Making them pleasanter gave enjoyment to those whose talents lay in that direction. Yukiko urged that they begin with the common room. "It is where we shall most be together," she said, "not simply for ease and company, in trouble too, or communion, or all." Hanno nodded. "Our marketplace," he agreed, "and markets began with temples." "Well," cautioned Dushan, "we'd better plan things so the decorating doesn't interfere with the use." The three found themselves alone there one evening. The ship maintained Earth's immemorial cycle of day and night, the clock to whose beat life had arisen and evolved. It would gradually shift to the different rhythm of the destination world. Dinner was past, and others had withdrawn to their rest or their recreations, none of which happened to be here. In the corridor beyond, twilight deepened toward darkness. Soon the widely spaced soft gang lights would turn on. Dushan fixed a box to wall brackets he had forged in vine shapes. "I thought you were going to carve decorations on that first," Hanno remarked. "I want to put soil in it now and begin raising flowers," Dushan explained. "Later I will make an ornamental railing and attach it." Yukiko gave him a smile. "Yes, you do need flowers," she agreed. "Living things." What grew beneath her own hands was a mural painting, a landscape of hills, village, bamboo, in the foreground a blossoming cherry bough. "I will carve the railing in animal shapes," he sighed. "If only we could have animals aboard." Their DNA patterns reposed in the data bank. Some day, if all went well, there would be synthesis, growth tanks, release. "Yes, I miss my ship's cats," Hanno admitted, "but a sailor got used to doing without most things. It made going ashore that much the happier." His fingers plied rope, knotwork to hang at certain spots. Its Venetian pattern would not clash with the Asian motif. He glanced at the mural. "That's becoming lovely." Yukiko bowed in his direction. "Thank you. A poor copy, I fear, of what I can remember from a building that perished centuries ago, before things were recorded, for presentation at will in total sensory imaging."
"You should have done it on Earth."
"Nobody seemed interested."
"Or had you simply lost heart? Never mind. We'll beam it back from our planet. It's as special as anything we're likely to find there."
Its physical self would long since have gone down into the data bank, its materials into the nanotech processors, converted to whatever was needed for the next project. Aliot had contended that the whole idea was foolish. No one wanted to spend 15 years staring at a changeless picture. Why make it to destroy and replace with something else, when projection panels could instantly create any of thousands of simulacra?
"I think before then our friends will accept that this work was worth doing," Hanno added.
"They kindly let me indulge in my pastime," Yukiko said.
"No, I mean for its own sake. More than a pastime. We could invent plenty of mere amusements. We doubtless will. If necessary, we can just wait. A year goes by fast after you've had hundreds or thousands of them."
"Unless much happens," Dushan observed. Hanno nodded. "True. I don't pretend to understand what the physicists mean by time, but for people, it isn't so and so many measured units. It's events, experiences. A man who crowds his life and dies young has lived longer than one who got old sitting in tame sameness."
Perhaps the old man was finding his way toward wisdom, Yukiko ventured. She lowered her brush. Her tone grew troubled. For me, that was never possible. My years of quietness always became, at last, a burden. It is the penalty of never aging. The body does not ease its hold on the spirit. Nature meant us to die. Get out of the way. Leave whatever we gain to the new generations, Dushan said heavily. Yet nature brought forth our kind. Are we monsters? Freaks? Today everybody is like us.
Should that be?
Will it in the end cost the race its soul? Hanno kept busy with his rope work. I don't know, he answered. I don't even know if your questions mean anything. We are unique, we survivors. We were born into age and death. We grew up expecting them for ourselves. Then we endured them over and over and over, in everybody we loved, till we found each other. And that didn't end the losing. The primitive world shaped us. Look at what we're making here. Maybe that's why it's us going to the stars. We're the oldest people alive, but maybe we're also the last of the children. 15. A stateroom had space for little more than a seat, a dresser that doubled as a desk with terminal, and a bunk. But the bunk had width for two. Patulkius had stuck printouts of pictures onto his walls, scenes that existed no longer in their cities. The sonic playout gave a muted background of early 20th century jazz. That was the single kind of music on which he and Aliat could agree. Later styles were too abstract for her. Older Near Eastern tunes roused bad memories. They lay side by side, sharing warmth and sweat. His passions were always rather quickly slaked, though. He liked to laze for a while afterward, daydreaming or talking, before he either fell asleep or went in search of refreshment. Presently she stirred, kicked, sat up, hugged her knees, yawned. "I wonder what's happening now at home," she said. "As I understand it, now means very little to us. Now," he answered in his plodding fashion. "It will mean less and less the faster and farther we go." "Never mind. Why can't they stay in touch? You know, our drive screens out their beams." She glanced at him. He lay, hands behind head, look upon the ceiling. "Sure, but, neutrinos." "Those facilities are tied up." "Yes," she said bitterly. "We weren't worth building new ones for, but aiming at some star a million light-years away." He smiled. "Not that far. Not quite. Although a rather daunting distance, true. Who cares? I mean, all they ever get is stuff they can't figure out. They don't think it's even meant for us, do they?" "Yes and no. It's a reasonable guess that those are messages addressed to whom it may concern, to anyone who may be listening. But why should the senders think enough like us that we can easily decipher their codes? Besides, they're almost certainly robots. Very possibly, what we detect are nothing but beacons meant to attract more robots, like those we have sent toward them." She shivered a bit. "Nothing really alive there?" "Doubtful. Have you forgotten? Those are the strange places of the galaxy. Black holes, condensing nebulae, free matrices. Is that the term I want? Modern cosmology baffles me, too. But they're bound to be dangerous, generally lethal environments. At the same time, each is unique. Surely all star-faring civilizations will dispatch robots to investigate them. They are where everybody's machines will eventually meet. Therefore, it makes sense that those already there will send messages they, or their builders, hope somebody new will catch. Those always were the likeliest places to find signs of intelligence, the best for us to focus our instruments on." "I know, I do know," she snapped. "As for why we have received nothing unambiguous from the mother civilizations, never mind. I wanted a breath of outside air, not a lecture." He did turn his face toward her. The heavy features drooped. "I'm sorry, my dear," he said. "I find the subject fascinating. I might if I hadn't heard it all before, again and again, if something new could ever be said about it." "And if somebody new said it, right?" he asked sadly. I bore you, don't I? She bit her lip. I'm out of sorts. He avoided remarking that she had not answered his question. However, his tone sharpened a bit. You knew you were leaving the social whirl behind. She jerked a nod. Of course, she replied curtly. Do you suppose I didn't learn how to bide my time already in Palmyra? But I don't have to like it. She swung her legs around, stood, reached for the robe she had hung on a hook. I'm not sleepy either, she said. I'm going to a dream box and get relaxed. Unspoken was that evidently he had not eased her, though she had faked. He sat up. You go too often, he protested, without force. That's my business. She pulled the garment over her head, paused for a moment, met his eyes, glanced away again. Sorry, Gnaeus. I am being bitchy. Wish me a better mood tomorrow, will you? She leaned down to ruffle the shag on his chest before she departed, barefoot as she had arrived. The deck surfacing was soft, springy, almost like turf. The corridor reached empty, dimly lit at this hour. Ventilation gave a breeze and a susurrus. She rounded a corner and stopped. Wanderer did, too. Why, hello there, Aliat said in American English. Haven't seen much of you for a while. She smiled. Where are you bound for? 16. The closer Pythias flew on the heels of light, the more alien it and the outside universe became to each other. One did not care to look long into the view screens any more, if at all. The interior hull became like a set of caves, warm, bright, huddling places. Escape from their closeness lay in whatever work could be found or made, in sports, games, skills, reading, music, shows, traditional diversions, in the pseudo-lives of every sort that that computer engendered for those who linked with it. The circumstances were by no means bad. Most of mankind throughout most of history would have considered them paradise. Still, as Hanno had once implied, it was as well that two immortals a year could feel like quite a short span, and perhaps that was only true, or only true enough, of the survivors. Had any modern human lived sufficiently long? Would any ever learn how to tough out hard times, especially the hard times of the spirit? Was a subliminal doubt of it the underlying reason why none had hitherto ventured this faring? Be that as it may, challenges became welcome. Phaeacia, Hanno had suggested the name, was not Earth. The robot explorers reported an extraordinary degree of similarity. Sun, orbit, mass, composition, spin, tectonics, satellite. Countlessly many factors seem necessary to beget life chemistry closely resembling the terrestrial. Such worlds were few indeed, though few, given the size of the galaxy, might add up to hundreds. Yet nothing was identical, and much, perhaps most, utterly foreign. The absence of anything sentient was merely the difference plainest to humans, and probably the least important. Moreover, Phaeacia was less known than the goal Hanno had originally had in mind. It lay almost 150 light-years from Earth, near the edge of the communication sphere. Thus far, a single mission had reached it, and when Pythias left, a dozen years' worth of reports had been received. It was a world, as various and mysterious as ever Earth herself in her prehistory. The robots were still investigating. Pythias couldn't catch their messages while en route, but they would download their entire data hoard when it arrived. Doubtless the astonishments that waited were enormous. The travelers might spend a year or more in orbit, assimilating, before they took their first boat to the surface. Meanwhile, why not practice? To gain familiarity with the material was elementary prudence, incomplete, and often wrong though it must be. Hands-on experience was best gotten in advance, illusory though it must be. The senses no longer knew the gymnasium. Overhead arched sky, virginally blue save for clouds that were like breaths off the snow peaks at the horizon. The countryside round about lay verdant with blades that were not really grass.
Trees swayed to a lulling wind that smelled of their resin and the sun. Wings swept that air, and afar a herd of beasts galloped, swift and graceful. Wanderer remembered Jackson Hole as once it had been. His heart cracked. Mastering himself, he stooped to pluck a rock out of the spring bubbling at his feet. It glittered quartz-like. The heft of it was cold in his hand. Yes, he thought, I'd better brush up my geology. Cut some timber, Dushan ordered the robots. He pointed, over there, see if you can make planks. So, acknowledged the principal, and led its work gang off with their energy projectors, fluid reactants, and solid tools. Wanderer swung his head toward his companion. The weight of the induction helmet reminded him that he wasn't in a dream box. He was supposedly training his entire organism, but he stood in a place that surely didn't exist as it was being presented to him. Well, he could believe that something not too unlike it did on his new world. What are you doing? He demanded. We'll need wood suitable for construction wherever we decide to settle, Dushan explained. We don't want to depend on the wretched synthesizers, do we? Wasn't that the point of leaving Earth? He smiled, narrowed his eyes against the brilliance, dilated his nostrils, breathed deep. Yes, I like it here. You won't farm this kind of sight, Wanderer cried. Dushan stared at him. Why not? There'll be plenty of others. This, it would be wrong. Dushan scowled. How much of the planet do you want to keep for your private hunting preserve forever? It shocked Wanderer. Have we carried the enmities of our forefathers through all these centuries and now through these light years? 17. The nanoprocessors would take any material and transform it, atom by atom, into anything else for which they had a program. Out of their recycling came air, water, food. They could produce a complete, excellent meal, and often did according to individual choice. However, as a rule, Makandal took just the basic ingredients and, aside from drink, made dinner for everybody. She was a gifted cook, enjoyed the work, and felt it was a service, something that lent her life some meaning. No pretense. Machines lacked the personal touch that this archaic crew needed. Certainly they did at a time of celebration. The ship's calendar held many feasts, holy days and national days that Earth had mostly forgotten, private anniversaries, special occasions upon the voyage. Each fulfilled year of it was among them. That was by inboard time, of course. The faster Pythias flew, the shorter a span became in relation to the galactic wheel. It's getting kind of drunk out, she remarked to Yukiko on the third of those evenings. Having dined, folk had moved from the saloon to the spacious common room. Simulacrum panels had been raised, hiding the murals. They gave no scenes from home. It had been found that such were too likely to make an alcoholic party go somber. Patterns of light shifted and drifted, glowed and sparkled through a violet-blue dusk. Nevertheless, Hanno and Patulcius sat, goblets in hand, reminiscing about the 20th century, the two widely sundered 20th centuries that had been theirs. Wanderer and Svoboda revived the waltz, rotating embraced over the floor, earplugs giving Strauss to them alone. Their eyes also excluded the world. Dushan and Aliot danced, whooping and hand-clapping to some livelier melody. Kneeling as of old, Yukiko sipped at the bit of sake she was allowing herself. She smiled. It is good to see cheerfulness, she said. Yes, I felt tension in the air, Makandal replied. Not that it's gone away. Poor old Sam Giannotti. He tried so hard to get a little modern physics into my head, Hanno related slurrily. Hell, I could barely manage a half notion of what classical physics had been about. Made a song I did, at last. Sweat darkened Dushan's tunic beneath the arms and sheened on Aliot's bare shoulders and back. You should go join the fun, Makandal said. Black bodies give off radiation, sang Hanno off-key, and ought to continuously. Black bodies give off radiation, but do it by Planck's theory. Bring back, oh, bring back that old continuity. Bring back, oh, bring back Clerk Maxwell to me. Yukiko smiled again. I am enjoying myself, she said, but why don't you go? You were never a passive person like me. Ha, don't you kid me. In your peculiar ways, you're as active, as much a doer, as anybody I ever met. Though now we have Schrödinger functions, dividing up H by 2 pi, that damn differential equation still has no solution for psi. Bring back. Aliat and Dushan laughed into each other's mouths. Wanderer and Svoboda circled as if through a dream. Well, Heisenberg came to the rescue, intending to make all secure. What is the result of his efforts? We are absolutely unsure. Bring back. Aliat left her partner, approached, beckoned to Yukiko. Makandal stepped aside. The two whispered together. Dirac spoke of energy levels, both minus and plus. Oh, how droll. And now, just because of his teaching, we don't know our mass from a hole. Bring back. Aliat returned to Dushan. They left the room, arm in arm. She asked if you'd mind, didn't she? Makandal inquired. Yukiko nodded. I don't. I truly don't. She surely remembered that. But it was good of her to ask. Makandal sighed. His nature, too, isn't it? I've wondered. I'm a trifle in my own cups. Don't be offended, please. But I've wondered how much you really love him. What is love? Among my people, most people, what counted was respect. Affection normally grew out of it. Yeah. Makandal's gaze followed the pair still on the floor. Yukiko winced. Are you in pain, Corinne? No. Nothing's going to happen with those two. Though, as you say, it shouldn't matter if anything did, should it? Makandal made a laugh. Johnny's a gentleman. He'll ask me for the next dance. I can wait. Bring back. Oh, bring back that old continuity. 18. Stranger and ever stranger grew the cosmos that the ship beheld. Aberration of light sent star images crawling aside, while Doppler shift blued those forward and reddened those aft, until many no longer shone at any wavelength the eye could perceive. In the ship's measure, the mass of the atoms that its field scooped up increased with the rising velocity. Distances that it was traversing shrank, as if space were flattening under the impact. Time passed more quickly, less of it between one atomic pulse beat and the next. Pythias would never reach the haste of light, but the closer it sped, the more foreign to the rest of the universe it became. Alone among the eight, Yukiko had taken to seeking communion yonder. She would settle in the navigation chamber, otherwise unused until journey's end drew nigh, and bid the screens give her the view. It was a huge and eerie grandeur, there around her shell of humming silence, blacknesses, ring fire, streams of radiance. Before the spirit could seek into it, the mind must. She studied the tensor equations as once she studied the sutras. She meditated upon the koans of science, and at last she began to feel her oneness with all that was, and in the vision find peace. She did not let herself go wholly into it. Had she become able to, that would have been a desertion of comrades and dereliction of duty. She hoped she might help Dushan, and others if they wished, toward the serenity behind the awesomeness, once she herself had gone deeply enough. Not as a bodhisattva, no, nor a guru, only as a friend who had something wonderful to share. It would help them so much in the centuries to come. They had need of every strength. Hardships and dangers counted for little, would often be gladdening, a gift of that reality which had slipped from their hands on earth. The loneliness, though, 300 years between word and reply. How much more distanced might earth become in 300 more years? Never before had the eight been this isolated for this long, and it would go on. Oh, it was scarcely worse than isolation had grown at home. And if shiploads of settlers arrived once Phaeacia was proven habitable, if it was, if they did, what would they really have in common with the survivors but had worked on them more than they had foreseen? Forced in upon themselves, they discovered less than they perhaps had looked for. Horizons and challenge should open them up again, yet they might always be haunted by the understanding that they were not actually pioneers, mightily achieving what they had determined they would do. They were not quite outcasts, failures, leftovers from a history that no longer mattered, sent on their way almost casually, as an act of indifferent kindness. Their children, however. There was the future that Earth had lost. Yukiko ran a hand down her belly. Mother of nations! This body was not foredoomed in the way that women otherwise were, even today. The technology could keep you youthful, but it could not add one ovum to those with which you were born. Well, doubtless it could, if people so desired, but of course they didn't. Hers made new eggs as it made new teeth during her entire unbounded life. Don't scorn the machines. They'll save you from ever again having to watch your children grow old. They'll create the genetic variety that will allow four couples to people a planet. Yes, hope ranged yet. May it never go out of reach. Ship, what of the flight? She called. Velocity point 964C, sang the voice. Mean ambient equivalent matter density 1.04 proton. All mission parameters within 0.3%. Navigating now by the Virgo cluster of galaxies and seven quasars near the limits of the observable universe. Stars across Farnus. Drift of dandelion seeds. What? Springtime again? 19. After 7.5 of its own years, 10 times as many celestial, Pythias reached the halfway point of its journey. There was a brief spell of weightlessness as the vessel went on free trajectory, lasers and force fields withdrawn except for what was required to shield the life within. Majestically, the hull turned around. Heavily armored robots went out to reconfigure the generator net. When they were back inside, Pythias unfurled snare and kindled engine. Fire reawakened. At one gravity of deceleration, the craft backed down toward its goal. Trumpet notes rang through the air. Surely the travelers had special cause for festival. Macandal took 3 days preparing the banquet. She was in the galley, chopping and mixing, when Patulcius appeared. "Hi," she greeted him in English, which remained her language of choice. "What can I do for you?" He barely smiled. "Or I for you. I think I have remembered what went into that appetizer I mentioned." "Hm?" She laid down her cleaver and brought finger to chin. "Oh, yes. Tahini something. You made it sound good, but neither of us could recall what tahini was." "How much else has faded out of us?" he mumbled. Squaring his shoulders, he spoke briskly. "I have brought the memory back, at least in part. It was a paste made from sesame meal. The dish I thought of combined it with garlic, lemon juice, cumin, and parsley." "Splendid! The nano can certainly make sesame, and here's a grinder, but I'll have to experiment. And you tell me how wide of the mark I am. It ought to go well with some other hors d'oeuvres I'm planning. We don't want anything too heavy before the main course." "What will that be, or is it still a secret?" Macandal considered Patulcius. "It is, but I'll let you in on it if you'll keep mum. Curried goose, a 21-boy curry. Delicious, I'm sure," he said listlessly. "Is that all you've got to say, you, our champion trencherman?" He turned to go. She touched his arm. "Wait," she murmured. "You're feeling absolutely rotten, aren't you? Can I help?" He looked elsewhere. "I doubt it. Unless..." He swallowed and grimaced. "Never mind." "Come on, Nias. We've been friends a long time." "Yes, you and I. We could somehow relax with each other better than..." "Okay," he spat. "Can you speak to Aliat?" "No, surely not. Or if you do, what use?" "I
thought that was it, said Makandal low. Her sleeping around. Well, I can't say I'm overjoyed when Johnny spends a night with her, but it is something she needs. I've been thinking Hanno does wrong to ignore her passes at him. Nymphomania. No, not really. Grabbing out for love, assurance, and something to do. She spends too much time in the dream box as is. He struck fist in palm. But I am not something for her to do, am I? Not any more? I suspected that, too. Poor Nias. Makandal took his hand. Listen, I know her well, better than anybody else. I don't believe she wants to be unkind. If she avoids you, why, she feels ashamed. No, more like being afraid of hurting you worse. She paused. I'm going to take her aside and talk like a Dutch aunt. He flushed. Not on my account, please. I don't want pity. No, but you deserve more consideration than you've gotten. Sex isn't that big a thing, after all. A sound philosophy, Makandal said, but not too easy to put in practice when you aren't a saint and your body never grows older. How well I know. We can't have you wrecking yourself apart, Nias. If I... She drew breath, then smiled. We had some pretty good times in the past, you and I, didn't we? It was long ago, but I've not forgotten. He stared. A minute passed before he could stammer. You don't really mean that. It is sweet of you, but no, really, not necessary. Calm had come upon her. Don't think mercy, Hump. I like you. Well, no hurry. Best we take our time and see how things develop. Lord knows we have plenty of time, and if we haven't learned a little patience by now, we might as well open the airlocks. I mean, all of us aboard. After a moment, too bad, isn't it, that this tremendous quest of ours hasn't made us worthy of itself? We're the same limited, foolish, mixed-up, ridiculous primitives we always were. Today's Earth people wouldn't have our problems, but it is we, not they, who've gone out here. Pythias flew onward. Another 3.5 years passed inside the hull before the universe broke through like a storm wave crashing over the rail of a Grecian ship. 20. It came as suddenly through the musical robotic voice. Attention! Attention! Instruments detect anomalous neutrino input. It appears to be coded. Hanno cried aloud, a seafaring oath not heard these past 3 millennia, and sprang from his bunk. Light, he ordered. Illumination filled the room. It glowed amber in Svoboda's hair, the warmest color between the walls. From Earth? She gasped, sitting straight. Did they build a transmitter? He shivered. I should think Pythias would recognize. The answer interrupted him. The direction of origin is becoming clear, somewhat forward of us, broadcast rather than beamcast. Modulation is of pulse, amplitude, and spin. I am still engaged in observation and analysis to determine the velocity of the source and compensate for Doppler shift and time dilation. At present, the pattern appears mathematically simple. Yeah, start by making us aware it's artificial. Hanno's fingers stabbed the intercom touch disk. Has everybody heard? Meet in the saloon. I'll report to you there as soon as possible. Needlessly. Or was it? He reached for his clothes. Want to come, Svoboda? Her grin was a hunter's. Try and stop me. Perhaps it was equally superfluous to seek the command room. It might even be unwise to wait there amidst the terrible glory in the view screens. Too easily could that daunt the spirit and numb the mind. But sitting hand in hand, watching the numbers and graphic displays the ship generated for them, was like keeping a grip on a reality that otherwise would blow away into emptiness. Have you learned more? Svoboda must ask. Give the computer a chance, Hanno tried to laugh. It's only had a few minutes. Every minute for us is how much outside? An hour? How many millions of kilometers lay behind us? I detect a similar source, much weaker but strengthening, the ship told them. It is on the opposite side of our projected course. Hanno stared a while into distorted heaven before he said slowly, Yes, I think I understand. They know how we're headed, more or less, and have sent messengers to intercept us. However, of course, they can't tell exactly. Several different destinations may have looked possible to them, nor could they foresee factors like the boost we'd use. So they sent a number of messengers, pretty widely distributed, to lie radiating in the zone or zones we'd probably pass through.
They? Svoboda asked.
The others, the aliens, whoever and whatever they are. We found a star-faring civilization at last. Or it's found us.
Her own gaze went outward, gone rapt.
They will rendezvous with us?
He shook his head. Not quite, I think, given all the uncertainties and the distances and the long, unpredictable time out here till we might arrive. They'd not dispatch living crews. Those must be low-mass, high-thrust robot craft, maybe made for this one purpose.
She was silent half a minute. When she spoke, it sounded almost annoyed.
How can you be so sure?
Why, it's obvious, he answered, surprised. The radiation from our power plant ran well ahead of us only during the first year, till we got close to light speed. That wouldn't give them nearly enough warning if they set out to meet us when they picked it up. They can't live close by, or we'd have detected them from the solar system.
Obvious or smug? She challenged. How much do we know? We have barely begun our first tiny venture into deep space. How long have they been exploring? Thousands of years? Millions? What have they discovered? What can they do?
His smile twisted. I'm sorry. This is no moment to cast a shadow on. He sighed. But I've met a great many dreams over the centuries, and most of them turned out to be no more than that. It's been quite some time since our physicists decided they'd found all the laws of nature, all the possibilities and impossibilities.
He lifted a hand. I realize that's a proposition that can never be proven. But the likelihood has come to seem very high, hasn't it? I'd love to learn the aliens' own magic carpets flitting faster than light, but I don't expect to.
Reluctantly, she nodded. At least we must reason on the basis of what we do know. I suspect that's far less than you think, but what shall we do?
Respond.
Of course. But how? I mean, we're slowing down, but we're still near light speed. By the time that the machine, any of those machines up ahead, receives our signal, won't we be past it? Won't its answer take years to overtake us?
He squeezed her hand. Smart girl. You always were.
To the ship. We want to establish contact as soon as may be. What do you advise?
The answer jarred them both into bolt uprightness.
That is contingent. The transmission has changed character. It has become considerably more complex.
You mean they know we're here?
Where are they anyway?
I am refining those figures as I obtain more parallax. The nearest source is approximately a light year off our path, approximately twice that distance vectorially.
Bail! Then they can detect us instantly?
No, wait, Hanno.
Svoboda's words came a little unsteadily, but fast. That needn't be. Suppose the broadcast is automatic, a cycle. First, a simple alert signal, then the message, then the alert signal again, over and over. The message alone, we might not have recognized it for what it is, supposed it was just some natural thing.
When I first acquired it, Pythias volunteered, I assumed it was a fluctuation in the background noise, conceivably of interest to astrophysicists, but irrelevant to this mission. It was Dopplered and otherwise warped out of identifiability. The low-information transmission that succeeded it made clear that here is no random flux. It also provided unambiguous data by which the warp functions could be determined. I am now compensating for them, and thus reconstructing the message proper.
Hanno sagged back. How often have they done this? He whispered. With how many others?
The reconstruction is not yet perfect, but it continually improves as additional data come in, Pythias went on. Since the cycle is short in shipboard time, I should soon have good definition. The message itself must be fairly brief, with high redundancy, although I anticipate high resolution as well. This is a visual mapping.
Darkness brimmed in a screen. Suddenly it was full of tiny light points, uncountably numerous.
Their blurriness dissipated, they sharpened, minute by minute. Colors appeared in them, and with that help, eyes began to make out three-dimensional shapes, self-recurrent in infinite complexity. "Prime numbers define a coordinate space," said the ship. "Digital impulses identify points within it, which in turn are members of fractal sets. Those functions should provide images, but the proper combinations must be found empirically. My mathematical component is running the search. When something intelligible emerges, that should give clues to obtaining further refinement and eventually extracting the entire content."
"Well," said Svoboda dazedly, "if the computers on Earth could design you in a single year..."
Hannah at her side, she waited. The unrolling dance of curves and surfaces flowed together. A picture grew into being. It was of stars. 21. The six around the saloon table looked sharply around when the two entered. Coffee and remnants of food bespoke what hours had passed. More so did haggardness and tension.
"Well," Petulchia snapped, "about time."
"Hush," Makandal murmured. "They've come as soon as they could." Her glance added, "An immortal ought to have more patience. But it has been hard waiting." Hanno and Svoboda benched themselves oppositely at the doorward end.
"You're right," the Phoenician said. "Getting a clear, complete message and deciding what it means took this long."
"We do apologize, however," Svoboda added. "We should have given you progress reports. We didn't think to, didn't realize how time was passing. There was never any, revelation, any exact moment when we knew." Weariness weighted her smile.
"I'm ravenous. What's available immediately?"
"You sit still, honey," Makandal said, rising. "I've got sandwiches already made. Figured this would be a long session." Aliot's look followed her out as if to ask, "Has she, in our shared bewilderment, gone back to her old south, or simply to her old caring?"
"She'd better bring me some, too, or you'll have a fight on your hands and halfway up your arms," Hanno said to Svoboda.
The jape rattled from nerves drawn wire thin.
"All right," Wanderer demanded. "What is the news?"
"Corinne's entitled to hear from the start," Svoboda replied. His fingers clutched the table edge. The nails whitened.
"Yes, I'm sorry."
She reached to stroke a hand. "You merely forgot. We're beyond ourselves, every one of us."
"Well, Corinne isn't fond of technical details," Hanno said. "I can start with those, and, with apologies to those of you who aren't either. I'm no scientist myself, you know, so this will be short."
Makandal returned while he was sketching the theory of the communication. Besides food on a tray, she bore a fresh pot of coffee and a bottle of brandy.
"Celebration," she laughed. "I hope."
The fragrances were like blossoms in spring.
"Yes, yes," Svoboda exulted. "The discovery of the ages."
"Theirs more than ours," Hanno said. "The aliens, I mean. But we have to decide what to do about it." Dushan leaned forward, elbows on table, heavy shoulders hunched.
"Well, what is the situation?" he asked, levelly enough.
"We're receiving the same message, repeated and repeated," Hanno told them while he ate and gulped. "It's from two sources, one closer to our path than the other. Quite likely there are more that we haven't come in range of. If we continue on our present track, we may pick them up. The nearest is a couple of light years from us. It appears to be on station relative to a line drawn between Sol and Phaeacia's sun, roughly the path we're following. Pythias says that's easy to do, just keep yourself from orbiting away. As I was saying while you were out, Corinne, everything suggests that the aliens sent robots to sit broadcasting continuously. A little antimatter would provide ample power for centuries."
"The message is pictorial," Wanderer interjected.
"Well, graphic," Hanno proceeded. "You'll all see it later. Often, no doubt, trying to squeeze extra meaning out of it. I suspect you'll fail. No real images, just several diagrams, maps, representations. Transmission to a ship traveling at Einsteinian speed, a changing speed at that,
Must be a tough problem, especially when the aliens can't know what our capabilities are for receiving and decoding, or how we think, or much of anything about us. Detailed pictures might be impossible for us to untangle. Evidently, they compose the simplest, least ambiguous message that might serve. I would in their place. But what is their place? Yukiko wondered. Hanno chose to take her literally. I'm coming to that. What we got first was a lot of light points in three-dimensional space. Then little bars appeared next to three of them. Then we got those three points in succession. It must be same ones. Each by itself, with the bar enlarged so we could see vertical lines on it. Then the view returned to the light points in general, with a red line between two of those that are marked. Finally, another line appeared, from about two-thirds along the first one, offside to the third marked light point. That's all. Each exposure lasts about a minute. The sequence finishes and starts over. After 16 cycles, it becomes a plain series of flashes that could just as well be rendered by dots and dashes in sound waves. This goes on for the same total time, after which we return to the graphics, and so on, over and over. Hanno sat back. He grinned a bit. What do you make of it? That isn't fair, Patulkius complained. No, don't be a tease, Aliat agreed. Hold on. Makandal's eyes shone darkly bright. It's worthwhile making us guess, bring more minds to bear on the problem. The ship's mind must already have solved it, Patulkius said. Nevertheless, Lord, let's have a little fun. I think those light points stand for stars, a map of this neighborhood in the galaxy. One of the three special ones has got to be Sol, the other Phaeacia Sun, and the third, where the aliens are. Right. Wanderer's tone quivered with an equal excitement. The bars, are they spectrograms? Brilliant, you two, Svoboda said happily. Wanderer shook his head. No, it's pretty obvious, though I do look forward to actually seeing it. Ascending from the others. Hanno nodded. Pythias ran through the astronomy database and confirmed those identifications, he related. The third was hardest because the three-dimensional representation is on such a small scale. But by expanding the fractals as well as searching the records, anyhow, it turns out to be a star on our port quarter, if I may speak two-dimensionally. About 30 degrees off our course and about 350 light-years from our present position. It's type G7, not as bright as Sol, but not too unlike. He paused. It's still less unlike that star in Pegasus, the one we believe may be the home of the nearest high-tech civilization to us, more than 1,000 light-years away. Then they have come this far, Yukiko said in awe. If they are from that civilization, if it is a civilization, Svoboda reminded, we know nothing, nothing. What powers have they that they know about us? We've tried to guess, we two, Hanno said. He drew breath. Listen, think. That third star, is about 430 light-years from Sol. That means it's within the radiosphere of Earth. For a while, starting in the 20th century, Earth was the brightest radio object in the solar system, outshining Sol in that band. That was interrupted, you remember, and afterward people developed communications that didn't clutter the spectrum so grossly. But the old wavefront is still expanding. Even beyond Star 3, it's still detectable if you have instruments as good as ours, which the aliens certainly do. Very well. However they got to Star 3, they soon found that Sol had a brilliant radio companion. Nobody has spotted that at Pegasi, the mother star, assuming that is where the aliens originated. It's too distant. Nothing from us will reach it for centuries. So the, colonists, or visitors, at 3, are on their own. Now, take things from their viewpoint. In due course, Sol ought to be sending out ships, too, if it hasn't already begun. It will be especially interested in contacting the nearest neighbor high-tech civilization it can identify, Mother Stars. The aliens could send robots to lie along the general path between those two. Our robots, bound that way, are smart and versatile. They would, at the least, beam word back to Earth. You recall they're equipped to do that from space, as we aren't, because they don't boost all the while. Time touches them less than us. Unfortunately, I think they must already have gone too far to acquire the signal, which indicates the aliens have not been at 3 extremely long. There is another good possibility for the aliens. Sol folk should also be especially interested in stars like their own. Phaeacia's sun is that sort, and it lies in the same general attractive direction as Mother Star. It's much the nearest to Sol that fits both requirements. So the aliens sent robots to lie along that path, too. We've encountered those. Silence closed down. Eyes dropped in thought or stared at walls until Aliat said, "But robots went ahead of us to Phaeacia. Why haven't they reported anything about this?" "Maybe the messenger craft hadn't gotten here when they passed by," Patulkius said. "We don't know when the messengers arrived." He pondered, "except that it must have been less than 430 years ago, did you say, Hanno? Otherwise the aliens could have had robots at Sol by now." "Maybe they do," Aliat shivered. "We've been gone a long time." "I doubt it," said Wanderer. "That would be one hell of a coincidence." "They might not want to, for whatever reason," Makandal pointed out. "We're completely ignorant." "You're forgetting the nature of those robots at Phaeacia," Svoboda said. "They're not like the ones bound for Pegasi in the wake of messages beamed beforehand, great, intelligent, flexible machine minds intended to attempt conversation with other minds able to understand what they are. The Phaeacia robots were designed and programmed to go there and collect information on that specific planetary system. Also, monomaniacs. If they noticed these neutrino bursts en route, they paid no attention." She smiled sardonically. "Not their department." Yukiko nodded. "Nobody can foresee everything," she said. "Nothing can." "But when we're surprised, we can investigate and learn." Hanno's words rang. "We can." Their looks shot to him and struck fast, all but Svoboda's. The color mounted in her cheeks. "What do you mean?" Dushan rumbled after several breaths. "You know what," Hanno replied. "We'll change course and go to Star 3. "No," Aliat screamed. She half sprang to her feet, sank back down, and shuddered. "Think," Hanno urged. "The diagram, that line between our course, this very point of our course, and 3. What is it but an invitation? They must be lonely, too, and hopeful of hearing marvelous things." End of Side 13. To continue, turn the cassette over.